Hello, it's Thursday, April 4th, and welcome to Paper Cuts, where we giggle awkwardly at the papers, then rant bemusingly, like Rishi Sunak when he gets asked a simple question. If you want to hear more outraged giggles, remember you can join the Paper Cuts Supporters Club. Visit back.papercutsshow.com, which will give you exclusive access to extra bits. But if you're already a supporter or you're not able to sign up at the moment, here's a way to help us out for free. Share the link papercutsshow.co.uk to three of your friends or enemies. We're not fussy, as long as they listen. Now, here are the headlines for today's edition. Party like it's 1997. Labour set to go bigger than Blair in election win. Turn that frown upside down. A Guardian hack tries to find their playful side. That's what friends are for. The eye discusses the perfect number of mates. Welcome to Paper Cuts. We read the papers so you don't have to. Thanks for joining us on Paper Cuts, where we rifle through the papers like a disgruntled special advisor trying to find something positive in the coverage. I'm Jacob Jarvis, and with me today is actress and impressionist Jan Ravens. Hi, Jan.
Hello. It's Jan. Jan Ravens. Hello, I'm Jan Ravens, and I'm on Paper Cuts also. I am very happy to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, that's too directly reading from the script there, aren't I? And we've also got Ben Blissett from TLDR News. Ben, I'm not going to give you any sort of soft Ben.
No, that's good. Thank you. Hello.
So what have we got on the front pages today? Ben, let's start with you.
Yeah, so we've got some coverage here about the strike on aid workers in Gaza. So we've got the eye running with Gaza plunges into new aid crisis. We've got The Guardian going with former Supreme Court judges add voices to calls for Israel arms ban. We've got The Times going with something a little bit different. So they're going with this new election poll saying that Hunt forecast to lose his seat in 1997-style Labour landslide. They've also gone with a big piece on blood tests to help spot Alzheimer's years early. And then we've also got The Telegraph going with judges to look at soft terms for deprived offenders. So, yeah, a bit of a mix from the broadsheets today. A little bit on Gaza, but a little bit on some other smaller stories, I guess.
Jan, what have you got?
Yes, there's a very mixed bag in the tabloids. On the front of The Sun, Rishi's been talking to The Sun, and he's told them that he's going to quit the European Court of Human Rights if they don't allow his Rwanda plan through. He's going to stamp his foot and scream until he's sick. That's that.
It's worked well so far for him.
In the Daily Mail, the word naked appears in the headline, which is always good, I'm sure. MPs caught up in naked honey trap sex sting. It's like one of those headlines which is just sort of random words put together in a certain order. Serving minister among those feared to have been targeted by hostile state. A sinister cyber honey trap scandal. Victims have voiced concerns that those behind the spear phishing attack seem to have intimate knowledge of their lives and movements. Well, and apparently you can rest assured Giovanni will return to Strictly after bully claims.
Thank God.
Yes. Now, the Daily Star seems to need a good deal of distraction from all the horrible things that are going on in Gaza and Ukraine and everywhere, because they've led on Excalibur Arise, a huge quest, apparently, to find King Arthur's lost sword. So that's topical. Yes, I mean, they've gone back, you know, several hundred years in order to find a story that they think their leaders will find palatable. And the Daily Mirror, rather horribly, actually has got sick dogfight ring smashed, which looks at some horrible pictures of these poor dogs fighting for the amusement of these, you know, guys that stand around cheering them as they destroy each other. Disgusting. Horrible. But Peter Andre's had a baby, so that's all right.
First up, things can only get better. According to a new YouGov poll, Labour is set to win a landslide bigger than Blair's 1997 win. Ben, can you talk me through the polling and a bit of how the papers are covering this?
Yeah, so it's a new YouGov poll. So this is a new MRP poll. It's the first one since they did one back in January, and it's predicting Labour on a 154 seat majority. So this is relatively significant. It would mean that Labour have more seats than Blair did in 97. It means that the Tories would have fewer seats than John Major did then as well. So it's predicting this massive landslide victory for Labour. It's It's also interesting because it's actually predicting a better victory than it was predicting, than the MLP poll predicted back in January as well. Puts Labour on 41%, the Tories on 24%. The SNP reduced quite significantly, so it puts them back down to sort of 19 seats in Scotland.
So Labour are going to actually win in Scotland?
Yeah, Scotland's the big one. So there it looks like Labour is going to not necessarily re-establish like a stronghold in Scotland. It's not like they're going to win a huge amount there, but they're going to reduce the SNP down to 19. I think they're predicted to get... about 20-ish seats, if I'm remembering correctly. I don't have it up here. But yeah.
What about the Greens and Reform and all these other little people who are sort of, sneaking, hanging away at the bottom?
A lot's been said about Reform, and it looks they're predicted to get 12%, but zero seats. So Reform's the really interesting one. So it looks like they're going to do very well in terms of vote share, but not in terms of seat share. In fact, the strongest seat that they're predicted to the highest percentage they're expected to get in any seat is 27%, but that's still 20 points behind Labour. So that's their strongest showing.
Okay.
And the closest they get to any party is 10 points in any of the other seats. So, as I say, the papers have been running a lot in the last few months about Reform and about their potential impact.
Yes, yes, yes.
But it's looking like it's not going to be too much. But it's an interesting one. I think the main takeaways are, as you say, Scotland. Scotland is the big thing to talk about here. The fact that the SNP have been, embroiled in scandal the last year, they've not been doing terribly well, and that looks like it's going to be reflected in the election. And Labour maybe not re-establishing a huge electoral base in Scotland, but at least getting some seats, and it should help them, obviously. I mean, it's looking like it's going to help them get a relatively large majority. Yeah. So things only seem to be getting better for Starmer as time goes on. There's some assumption by Sunak that if he just holds out and waits, that things are going to get better for him in terms of polling. But if these two MRP polls are anything to go by, that doesn't look like that's going to happen.
How do the papers seem to be reacting to this? Because it must be a bit strange for them having, touted the Tories for so long, and now it looks like they will be completely trounced.
I mean, the Telegraph isn't really running with that today. I mean, the Times has said that Hunt's forecast to lose his seat. It feels like, from what I remember, they covered the January MRP poll a lot more widely, and that seemed to be the big shock. That one was the first sort of MRP poll in a little while, and it was the first one to predict such a large sort of majority for Labour. And it feels like this time round it's not got as much coverage as in January. It feels like maybe we're all sort of like, we know this, we know that this is going to happen.
They do feel a bit sort of pointless at the moment in a way, because they're just sort of telling us different ways that Labour can win. I mean, the thing that really kind of, the exciting thing I think about all these polls is, Jeremy Hunt might lose his seat. Penny Mordaunt. And it's sort of because Jeremy Hunt always, that whole kind of, I'm the sensible version of the Chancellor. And he always has that sort of slightly unhinged look in his eye. And he looks like he looks like one of those annoying vegans, where like his neck's too thin for his shirt, and I cycle to work every day, and I'm really in control. Yeah. There's something very madly in control about him.
And he wants to talk about austerity as much as vegans want to talk about veganism as well.
Yes, it's his buzzword. But yeah, I'm quite sort of excited about the amount of, we're going to have so many Portillo moments.
Mm. Yeah.
We've got Hunt, this MRP poll, as you say, Hunt is expected to lose his seat. Mordaunt, who's another leadership potential successor to Sunak, expected to lose a seat. Michelle Donnellan expected to lose a seat. Ian Duncan-Smith, Jacob Rees-Mogg. And I also looked into this, and the papers haven't really run with this, presumably because they already know this to be the case and it's not too big, but George Galloway also expected to lose to Labour, which I think we already all knew. Yeah. But it's good to know the MLP poll thinks that's going to happen as well.
There are only so many TV anchor jobs as well, so it's you've got to feel somewhat sorry for them there, I suppose. So, Jan, as well as there have been bad news politically for the Tories, there's also on the front of the Times a little bit about them being unlucky in love, isn't there?
So yes, why I'll never go out with a Tory, says a woman. Apparently there's a sort of some polarisation occurring between the sexes, and it's quite interesting. There's two articles in two different papers about this, where left-wing girls, Tory boys, there's people who will, women who will swipe left if men put conservative in their dating bios. And indeed, moi-même, I have in my own dating bio, fact fans, my red line is, I won't, if you voted Brexit, forget it. And if you think Boris Johnson's a good idea, it's not going to happen. So I didn't quite go the full Tory. But, no. You know, but it's this sort of, I think it's this more, these days, the version of the Tories that's there now, you know, most women are sensible enough to go, you know, there are, you know, that we're really, you know, bottom of the barrel scraping here.
So it's no to Boris Johnson, but a maybe to David Gawk. That's what we're suggesting.
Well, yeah, no. I mean, it was sort of like more maybe to sort of, you know, Dominic Grieve or something, okay. You know. But actually not Dominic Grieve, because I met him, he's a bit boring. But actually in the Telegraph, there's a piece by Michael Deacon, and he's very exercised. He says, the left-wing radicalisation of young women should alarm us all. And he says that Andrew Tate's influence on boys is less of a worry than The Guardian's influence on girls, which I would take issue with. I mean, I think Andrew Tate encouraging boys to, you know, choke young women, to treat young women like a piece of shit is actually more of a worry than, you know, girls kind of thinking that it's best to be, you know, a wet left liberal, you know, think that's kind of, you know, generally less harmful.
It reeks of someone who's never seen anything about Andrew Tate. Like, someone who knows about Andrew Tate surely wouldn't be saying anything like that. Like, that's mad.
It over-eggs the readership of The Guardian surely quite a lot, doesn't it, as well, Ben? I mean, the Andrew Tate's videos get huge amounts of views, which The Guardian... unfortunately, not as many people are actually buying that paper. So just on a pure numbers game, even if you remove any of the obvious bollocks of the context and the content, but just on numbers, sincerely, there can't be as many people reading The Guardian as are watching Andrew Tate.
No, exactly. And it's been one of those phenomenons in the last few years where a huge number of sort of younger men have been watching this Andrew Tate content online. And it got to the point where, you know, schools had to bring in people to advise teachers on how to deal with this in order to sort of almost de-radicalise pupils. I don't think The Guardian's having that impact.
No. The world can be quite a miserable place, and boy, does The Guardian like to remind us. But today, they're going for something a little bit different, the pursuit of happiness. They've sent an intrepid reporter, Tim Dowling, out to find a way to tap into his playful side. Jan, what did he get up to when he was having this nice, playful, happy day out?
Well, he went to a petting zoo. It's Tim Dowling, you know, who writes that column in The Guardian of a weekend where he sort of talks about the DIY he has to do and how his kids are being annoying and nobody in his family appreciates him. And I think he's one of these sort of dads that also plays in a band. So he's very, very much at sort of on The Guardian stereotype list. But anyway, he's a jolly, jolly chap, Tim Dowling, and he doesn't want to be cynical or pessimistic, but, you know, how do you get happy in gloomy times? And apart from sort of going to the seaside and the petting zoo, tries colouring in, doesn't think much of that. But the thing that seems to have the most impact on his happiness is going to a ballpark. Now, he goes to this ballpark, which is apparently located at the Balloon Museum at Old Billingsgate Market, which is, of course, the old fish market. And when I think of ballparks, taking kids to ballparks, which in these sort of like barns, in these sort of corrugated iron barns of sort of slides and balls, and I can just smell hot children. So the idea that it's located at Billingsgate, where there might be the sort of lingering smell of fish as well, makes me think this is really not a nice olfactory experience. But anyway, Tim immerses himself in the balls, and it's the size of a swimming pool filled to the brim with bright yellow balls. He says he doesn't submerge himself in it because you don't know where these balls have been. But, you know, being alone, being weightless, buoyed up by balls, and then a sound and light show starts. And apparently this is the, of all the different rooms at the Balloon Museum, the ball pit is the only one where people have to be moved on during busy periods. Do you think it's probably one of those places where, you know, you go, you know, on one of these elaborate stag weekends and then next we've got the ball pit, you know.
15 minutes, isn't it? Yeah. It's like not for long either.
Yeah.
I can't say that I feel like I would find that fun whatsoever. It sounds very claustrophobic and smelly and
annoying just in all ways, to be honest.
Yes.
Ben, does this feel just like basically a journalist that wanted to have a nice day out? This feels like the sort of assignment I would have attempted to get myself on because I thought, I don't want to be sent to court or go do something horrible. I'm just going to go to a ball pit.
I mean, it does sound ideal, doesn't it? As one to work on. I mean, all of those things sound better than just sitting in a warm room. Although, I don't know, the ball pit does... When I first saw this, I thought it was that... What's the bar called that's the...
I'm not sure.
Is it Bally Ballerson? Is that it?
Bally Ballerson.
Is
it actually the ball that we're being nodded at by the producer?
Okay, good. Which is a ball pit and it's a bar and you can have drinks there and everything. So when I saw this, I thought it was referring to that. I know that people go to those sort of places now. There's loads of these sort of activity bars in London now. So it seems like another one of those. But it's like a museum type thing?
It's in the Balloon Museum.
Yeah.
I feel like at the old Billingsgate Fish Market. Yeah. I mean, there's too many things going on, actually.
Yeah. My point is, if you could have a drink there, I can see that it would be mildly interesting, I guess.
Imagine how sticky the balls would get.
This is true. Yeah. But no, I mean, in terms of something to work on, to go and have a look at, I suppose that's probably one to do, especially with all the other activities he got up to.
Mm. I actually almost went on a date with Bally Ballerson, but it turned out he was conservative when I was on his dating app profile. So I chose against it.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
I'm David Baddiel. I'm a writer and a comedian and a Jew.
I'm Saeeda Varsi. I'm a businesswoman and a politician and a Muslim.
Jews and Muslims always seem to be in the news or on the news. Lots of people talk about us, and this is us talking about ourselves.
The kind of things that people say don't touch, we are going to go there.
I mean, I think Jews and Muslims are talking about these things, but I think they're not talking about them together because they're worried that if they do, sparks might fly. A Muslim and a Jew go there.
Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
The headlines are the nice bright balls of the newspapers, and we're diving straight into them today. Ben, what gems have we spotted?
Yeah, so there's one story here which is about a drinker who saw the face of Jim Morrison in his cocktail glass. Well, even that is slightly controversial. Other people have claimed that it looks more like Brian May, Alice Cooper, or even Charles Manson. So they've gone with the headline, "There's too much Jim in my drink," which makes sense.
It makes sense if you are believing that looks remotely like Jim Morrison.
Exactly. With any of these stories, they never look that much like anything. It's just vaguely a stain that, you know, if you look hard enough, you can probably see something. Also got a story about Beyonce going out in a shawl. I don't know how this is a story, but they're going with it. They've got pages to fill, I guess. So she's gone out in a shawl and they've... it is literally about 10 words long and they've titled it "Shawl About the Bay."
Okay. Yeah, there's something
there. Is this a
reference
I'm not getting?
"Shawl About the Bay." All About the Bay.
All About the Bay. Sitting at the dock of the bay.
I was wondering what this was. Okay.
It's all about the bay.
Our producer tells us it's all about the bass, apparently. Okay.
Good thing one of us is.
We're out of touch. We're not as locked in as the Sun's sub editors are. You've also got page 11, which I feel is not quite as niche a reference.
No, this has been. I've seen this about other places as well. So this feels more like a proper story. Mm. So they're talking about these new £150 tickets to go to Balmoral, which seems like a lot of money to look around an old house.
You do get your tea.
Oh, you do. Yes, you do. This is true. Yes. You get tea included in that. So they're talking about that. They're saying that it's been open for the first time. It's 170-year history and that it's sold out, that the tickets sold out in hours. So they've titled that one "Rich Tea." I think they could have done something better with that for the headline.
I also think I used to be able to go to my grandparents' house and they would give me money. So I can't say that it attracts me whatsoever.
Are you saying that people should go to your grandparents' house instead?
Yeah. Well, actually, no. I want them to keep the cash all for me, to be honest.
Do you think Charles and Camilla show up like Carson and Mrs. Hughes off of Downton Abbey, you know, and serve you your tea?
For that money, I would want that.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. I would want that.
And I'd expect better biscuits and rich teas as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of which, I have a headline here about the story that Hobnobs have been voted the number one Dunkin' biscuit.
Okay.
And yes, there's a picture of a builder and Lorraine Kelly with a cup of tea and the biscuit. Hobnob voted the number one Dunkin' biscuit. The headline, Oat Cuisine.
That's actually quite good.
Yeah.
I think I agree as well that it's the most dunkable biscuit.
It's robust.
Yes.
It's got a lot
there.
Yeah, unless you like the sort of thing of the chocolate digestive where you dunk it and the chocolate melts a bit. So this next one is about a joker who got her dying wish when the Grim Reaper attended her funeral with a scythe. Sharon Taft thought the idea of her pal Kenny turning up in costume was hilarious. The grandmother of 12 of Malden, Essex, even wanted him to say to mourners, "You're next." So the jolly the jolly headline that the star have come up for that one is The Grim Reaper.
Oh, very good. That's an
That is achingly
story as well.
Funny, isn't it? Okay, and here's one also from the Daily Star. Nearly half of fitness fans do not rinse their gym underwear after every workout. I remember somebody that was in the musical of Cats once telling me that, you know, that they danced around in all those leotards that they had to wear in Cats. And when they had two shows a day, they weren't allowed to, you know, they only had one costume. So they couldn't wash the costume from the matinee. And so they had to get into this dank, sweaty leotard for the evening show.
Some people have spent good money on them, yeah.
I know. Anyway, so really, you know, it would be better to get your washing gear into the washing machine before you use it again. And the headline is, get your kit off.
It does what it says on the tin-ish.
I don't think it's particularly witty, that one, is it? I'm very disappointed. But anyway.
We've made it through the serious news, and now it's time to relax in the features section of the paper. What is Gwyneth Paltrow sitting on this week? What is the latest treatment for geriatric millennials desperate to look like youthful Gen Zs? Today, we have a story from The Eye. So Sophie Morris tells us that she has the perfect number of friends, but it doesn't feel that way, which sounds like maybe it's not the perfect amount, or I don't know, she doesn't have the perfect amount. Who knows? Jan, can you tell me a bit more about Sophie's situation?
Well, it's all very complicated. This friend business, apparently the ideal, I mean, it's, you know, you can have a sort of, you can have circles of friends instead of going out in radiating circles. But the ideal number of friends for your close circle is between 5 and 7. And poor Sophie is saying that she has 5 or 7 good friends. But obviously, the way life goes, some of them move away and some of them are now in different countries. So whereas, you know, in times gone by, we would have our 5 or 7 friends living in our town. Now they're sort of spread far and wide. And so, although on the plus side, we do have the ability to connect with friends on social media or on WhatsApp or whatever. So, you know, it's not hard to reach out. But I think it's what's interesting about friendship is that some people are good at nurturing it and some people aren't. And I think it's like, it's what Sophie needs to realize is that some people are the kind of people that will go, hey, you know, that will ring up or reach out and go, hey, you know, what about we all meet up on Friday? Or and some people just aren't. And you have to sort of sometimes accept that you're the one that does that.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's just me being the unpopular person that nobody wants to see.
No, I agree. I think I'm a good friend if you stick my friends right in front of me.
Yeah.
But if I actually have to, you know, keep in touch, other than sending memes and stuff like that, I'm really, really bad at it. So I think, yeah, I can see when people move away. Like one of my best friends has moved to New Zealand and
our
communication is just sending memes to each other now. And I text him to be like, how's it all going? And he's like, here's a meme. That's kind of where we've got to.
I think one of my good friends as well is in New Zealand at the minute. And it's weird because I actually think I speak to them a little bit more because it sort of incentivizes you to do that. I think it's just difficult as well finding time to actually meet up. So I end up, you know, speaking to closer friends on, as you say, online a lot more. And maybe that was just, you know, it feels more normal now because we did that for years in lockdown. Maybe that was part of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like meeting up is the difficult part, isn't it?
I think the really nice thing to do is not only that, like, you know, cherishing the friends you have, but also kind of making new friends. And, you know, over the last year or two, I've made kind of some new friends. And that's really kind of nice because you say, oh, I've got my friends. But actually, that thing of meeting somebody, I mean, I don't mean romantically, but that thing of meeting somebody and having a real connection with them and kind of, oh, hello, you know, and it's sort of like, you want to be my friend, you know, it's kind of, I want to be your friend, you know.
Yeah.
And if you can make that connection, that's quite nice to have a new sort of input of a fresh friend.
Do you agree with the 5 to 7 friends thing, or do you think that's just been nonsense to hook a massive bit of story around?
I think... It sort of sounds about right, but you know, who's counting? And also, you know, you don't want, it's like when you invite people to a party and you sort of think, oh, well, if I invite that circle of friends, then I've got to invite the other person that comes in, you know, because they do sort of go out in circles like that, don't they? And once you get one from that lot, you've got to get the whole lot. So, yeah, I think 5 to 7 sounds fine. But to be honest, I haven't counted mine. No.
Ben, your thoughts. Have you counted your friends?
I haven't counted them, but I would guess as well that they were probably between, you know, close friends, probably between 5 and 7. I think you're right. I think it's probably a good number, I guess. But I don't think there's any point in counting or worrying about it. Like, it's different for everybody. You know, people are a bit more introverted, maybe a bit closer with a smaller number of people. Some people may be a bit more extroverted and not as close with maybe a larger group of people. You know, I know friends who feel like, you know, they're close with tons of people, but I, you know, it's not worth stressing about, really. I think it's different for everybody.
I
think there's more than enough to stress about in this world than, you know, how many friends you do or don't have.
I think it's also really great to have different friends from different aspects of your life so that you wouldn't necessarily see them all together, you know, so that you've got friends that you work with, you've got friends that you've met at the school gates or whatever, you've got friends that you go dancing with, and you've got all those different sort of inputs and they feed different parts of you.
I think just on that as well, I mean, I think most people probably, because I've got friends from, because I'm from Yorkshire, so I've got friends from Yorkshire, I've got friends from uni in Nottingham, friends from here. And I suppose, like, you know, people here I see a lot more and I'm a bit closer with now, but obviously I still try and stay in touch with people from home and I'm doing, you know, bringing them all together next month for like a birthday thing. I think it's quite nice having, you know, as you say, different groups that do different things and you're close with at different points and all that. I think it's quite nice to have like a bit of a diverse group of people. So, yeah, I think, I think
this has turned into a whole other podcast.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well, I've got thousands of friends because all of you listening right now, you're all my close, good, lovely friends.
So you're trying to make us all feel bad then.
And that's the end of today's Paper Cuts. Thank you to Ben.
Thank you.
And thank you to Jan.
Thank you.
Remember, we are out 5 days a week and your support makes all of this able to happen. We are a 100% independent outfit and we spend £600 a month on newspapers alone. It'd be really fantastic if you could help us out and chip in a little to keep Paper Cuts on the road. For as little as £3 a month, you can get 20 episodes every month without adverts, support with a little bit more, and you can get extended episodes with extra material, plus the coveted Paper Cuts mugs and t-shirts, which are occasionally modelled by our panel. Follow the show notes to back.papercutsshow.com. That's back.papercutsshow.com to find out more. Our beloved supporters get a shout out on the show, and here are some now from all of us.
You're the sausage to my mash, Edmund Cotton.
You're the carrot to my hummus, Kay Mills.
You're the toad in my hole, Simon Hill.
About that, Simon.
I've been Jacob Jarvis, and you've been listening to Paper Cuts on a day when boffins announced we're close to finding out what happens when we die. Time to get Ghostbusters on speed dial then. See you tomorrow.
Paper Cuts was written and presented by Podmasters Managing Editor Jacob Jarvis with Ben Blissett and Jan Ravens. The producer was Liam Tate, assistant producer was Adam Wright, and audio producer was me, Jade Bailey. Music is by Simon Williams, design by Jim Parrott, with original art by Modern Toss. The executive producer is Martin Boytosh, and the group editor is Andrew Harrison. Paper Cuts is a Podmasters production.